Okay, here we are. Hour number three already on this Monday night. I'm going to do a little bit here. Just hang on. And then we're going to get into some other things that are of great importance regarding the deployed bioweapon that they call a vaccine. Erica Kahn is here tonight, as always. Erica, welcome back. Thank you for being here.
Oh, good to be back. Thank you, Jeff.
Okay. What I want to talk about just briefly here, and then we'll get into this subject a little deeper. When I started out some of you know I was in television news for a number of years as an anchorman, news director. I saw it all. And that was the time, the last time, when there was actually any real journalism, because it was before Bill Clinton and his boss Hillary deregulated the news media business and allowed big corporations to come in and buy up 50% of the television stations, radio stations, newspapers in any particular city. Now I don't think there's much of a limit on it at all. But back then we had about, 10,000 approximately different owners of TV and radio stations and newspapers in this country. It wasn't some big amalgamation like it is now, held by a very few, like six corporations. And those days saw real journalism. We were allowed to cover stories and allowed to present them as they really were, not according to the party line or according to how the big corporation wanted the stations or the newspapers to present it. Those were the last days of real journalism. And in the 90s, I got to the point where I could see where it was going. It was turning into entertainment, comedy. It was a joke. It wasn't journalism. And back in the day, they had still some work to do on perfecting it, but they were working toward building news cycles. A news cycle could be a crime. It could be a natural disaster. It could be some entertainment controversy or outrage. It could be something that would last usually for weeks. Now, a news cycle can last a day, and it's gone and replaced by something else. But what they did, and what I watched back in the day before quitting television and starting this program, was how they baited people and led them around by their noses, got them to chase their own tails. And they did it by giving them, if you've ever gone fishing and they used chum, they would trick people with new diversions. And the people would find it to be fascinating. Wow, what an interesting twist on this story, they'd think subconsciously. And they'd start chasing it a different direction. Or they'd start a new set of belief principles that they would adhere to regarding whatever the subject was. I watched people en masse being led around by their noses. And that's the primary reason I quit television news and did this, what we're doing now. It just really bothered me a lot. It's showbiz. You've got to remember that. It's entertainment. It's comic relief. But more than that, it's mass mind control. And there is no end to the introduction of new calculated, supercomputer AI-approved psyops in the media, psychological operations to keep people interested, to capture their imagination, to scare the hell out of them, whatever, to keep control of them. All right, now, as a prelude, I'm going to stop there. You get the idea. regarding the coronavirus, but more importantly, the bioweapon, the deployed bioweapon called a vaccine, and the spike protein. What happens when something starts to get a little tired, running out of fuel? It can't scare people as easily. It can't be used to stampede the herd. What'll they do? And I'm not saying that this happens every single time. I'm just warning all of you to be on the lookout for potentials. And one of the things they do is via a psyop, they'll introduce something new that catches people completely off guard and sets a lot of them, oh my God, that's it. That's the answer. And all of a sudden, there's no more guesswork. There's no more walking around in a daze. They've got this is it. So there have been several things with this bioweapon and related stories that have always bothered me. Most recently, and if you've been listening to the program here with Erica, you know that we haven't jumped on board the Hydra Express. There are some very important scientific reasons why not. Hard reasons, real reasons. It's a sensational sci-fi twist, and I'll just say a couple of things about the Hydra, which is a very small freshwater life form, right? It's a freshwater life form. And there's a reason I'm emphasizing fresh water, and I'm going to let Erica explain all of that right now. So, and one other thing. The Hydra is not a parasite. Please understand that, and I hope Erica repeats that. It's not a parasite. So don't go crazy with this. Hold back. Do your due diligence, your homework, your analysis, and understand that we are being played with many different things all the time. And this could be very well one of the newest psyops concocted and laid upon us. So just keep that in mind. Just caution. Erica, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Well, you've summed it up nicely. I think, yes, people need to be cautious with the alternative news media as much as they are with mainstream media. There's a tendency to, I think, fabricate information to sell a panic package, so to speak, especially when they're running out of stories. And I don't know that that's what we're seeing here, but it's looking that way to me. I've worked in the field of scientific research for 30 years, and I know a con job when I see it. I'm actually astonished to see how this narrative has evolved in the absence of any supportive evidence other than a comic book narrative. I mean, this type of highly speculative thought process just shows a glaring lack of proficiency to the scientific method and an understanding of basic biology, to say nothing of, you know, what's involved in genetic engineering, genetic modification, gene transfer, transfection techniques, all of that. And these people that are promoting this narrative now, seemingly, with unquestioningly, I mean, they're not offering anything to support it, other than complete conjecture and supposition. And I'm disappointed that the public has, or much of the public has taken and run with it without so much as demanding some evidence. Jeff is correct in saying that the Hydra is not a parasite. It's never been known to parasitize a human. this idea that we're going to inject it through a needle and it's somehow going to take up residence in our body somewhere and do what? I don't know, take over our nervous system, control our thoughts.
it's a
comic book narrative.
It's a freshwater little aquatic animal. Freshwater. Understand. There's an angle to this. Go ahead.
I, I, And I'm not saying this is not in there. It could very well be in there. But we've discussed in prior programs how this may come to be. And I'm not sure that we've conclusively or anybody's conclusively identified it as being a hydra. Is it truly a hydra? I think we have to start with that. And, you know, there may be other parasites. The other one that's being touted right now is the one this Dr. Frank Zalewski is advertising. I don't doubt there could be all manner of contaminants in these things. Just to review the list of known contaminants that plague this industry, the injectables, not just vaccine, but any injectable pharmaceutical, can contain chips, particles, fiber that could enter through the manufacturing or packaging process and then contaminate the entire batch, pyrogenic substances, and these are microorganisms that can cause a fever, chemical contaminants, such as moisture, gases, vapor molecules, biological components. These include viruses, bacteria, or fungi that can cause disease and should not be found in pharmaceutical products. And how might this happen? Well, we can start with personnel, a lack of training, inadequate cleanliness and hygiene standards, direct contact with the materials or products, lack of personal protective equipment or appropriate clothing, malpractices like eating or drinking in the manufacturing or storage areas. And then we have the facility itself, poor design and inadequate space that can lead to cross-contamination and mix-ups. We had that happen at the facility that was manufacturing for the J&J and AstraZeneca back in June, Emergent BioSolutions in Baltimore, Maryland. They had to recall ultimately 75 million doses.
That's
not 7,500, not 75,000, 75 million.
Mm-hmm. And did they tell us what the contaminant was? Did they tell us?
Initially, they had mixed up the components that pertained to the J&J and the AstraZeneca. They weren't not mixing the proper components with the proper manufacturer. And then on a subsequent inspection, the inspectors found multiple sanitation procedural violations. Peeling paint, moldy walls, ceilings, floors, just the way the waste was being handled. You know, basic sanitation. We could also have improper ventilation, lighting, or air filtration system, inadequate cleanliness and sanitation practices, lack of adequate pest control and waste management measures. And then we have the materials, improper handling and storage, poor labeling, sampling, and testing of raw materials, degradation of materials due to environmental conditions, using materials that do not meet accepted guidelines, lack of dedicated professional or production facility for each product, absence of statutory compliant hygiene and cleanliness standards, insufficient cleaning or maintenance of labeling on materials and equipment used in the manufacturing process. So this goes on and on. And these vials are not being assembled or compounded in one facility. So at any point along the way, there's opportunities for introduction of materials that should not be there, but they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think the problem, you know, it was pervasive to begin with, but now that we have an FDA that is remiss in all manner of their duties, I shudder to think what's going on. So
those
I think
really
before
important.
We jump to conclusions,
go ahead.
That these microbial life forms are in there intentionally. I think this is the most likely scenario, and this is the one that has to be entertained. I'm familiar with gene modification techniques. None of them involve introducing a hydra through a needle into somebody's bloodstream. We use things like viruses or nucleotides that are encapsulated within lipid nanoparticles, or conversely, stem cells that have been genetically altered before introduced them into the body. But at no point do we introduce a independent living organism and expect it to take up residence and somehow take over somebody's nervous system. I mean, this is bordering on the ridiculous.
It's
and
chum.
It shows a complete lack of proficiency in the understanding of what this technology is. I have yet to hear any of these people bring up the topic of the real, I think, sinister part of this, which is the RNA or in the DNA. And then that is what's going to mess with your genetic expression, your DNA, your ability to regulate protein production and operate your physiology. Mind control, that's covered. And I think that should be obvious to people by now. But, yeah, we can alter people's emotion, cognition, behavior, simply by changing their gut microbiome. Anyone with an autistic child will know that much of their behavior can be mediated by addressing the issues that are happening in the gut, which would include parasites and bacteria and fungi. And if, you know, many times if you address that, you know, you can solve a whole raft of behavioral issues.
So it's good for all of you out there to take a good annual parasite cleanse. You can buy at any health food store. Just got black walnut in it and four or five other types of natural things, and you would be shocked, I think, many people.
Yeah, the gut is literally the second brain. So don't overlook that. And they have been contaminating our food with all kinds of GMO organisms and chemicals. And so we are being genetically altered that way, or at least our genetic expression. There's no need to put it in a needle.
Right. So the point is, let's just say this is a hydra, although we're not 100% sure. It's got tentacles, and people see it, and they freak out. They don't think, how small is that? Does that occur anywhere else in nature? How many other people beside the two that have come forward with pictures of two strange little items, how many other people have found them? Why aren't we seeing a parade of people with pictures? I found some here in this vial. I found some in those vials. We found. Nobody's saying that.
No.
So you've got to think. What, only two people coming forward, is this another psyop? I'm not saying it is. I'm saying it's a question that must be asked. That's pretty creepy, that little thing. I give you that. I wouldn't want that inside me. But it's a freshwater aquatic life form. If it goes into salt water, what happens if it goes in salt water?
Typically a freshwater organism would die.
Okay, and typically if it's in your, go ahead.
No, it's not a parasite. It's not suited to live within a human body. And you can argue it's genetically genetically modified to do that.
Well, you can argue all day long.
I'm all ears.
Tell me
how that happens.
Yeah, you can rationalize it all day long.
No, they do. They do use the Hydra as a model for studying the you know, human. Well, it has an extraordinary ability to regenerate itself because it's almost all stem cells. So it's intriguing from that standpoint. And these people like the Ray Kurzweils and the rest of them that want to live forever are you know, enamored with this creature.
Anyhow.
But the other thing we have to remember when we're looking at these micrographs, we are not seeing nano.
Let me lead into that just a little bit here.
Okay.
The internet is rife with people. That means loaded with people who have for years been using the term nano. Anything small is nano. No, that couldn't be more incorrect. It's not nano. If you can see it, if you can see it with a 600 power microscope, it's not nano. Nano is damn small. Look under Erica's name and guest tonight, and there's a video there. It's a short little video, and it'll show you how small nano is. Now, I've suggested that what we do see in some cases under high, high magnification may be the result of some original nano technology building something that ends up being observable. But go ahead, tell us how small nano really is and why people shouldn't be using this word so often.
Well, okay, the coronavirus is about 60 nanometers. You couldn't see that with these microscopes. Now, the strands of RNA that they're putting in these lipid nanoparticles are even smaller than the actual virus. So if you can't see 60 nanometers with these microscopes, these light microscopes, you're certainly not going to see the lipid nanoparticles or the iron oxide nanoparticles or the graphene oxide nanoparticles. I mean, you might see aggregates of these things, but they're not in the nanoscale, and they're certainly not biocompatible in these sizes. I shudder to think when these get injected into people what they're doing. Clotting would be the the most obvious thing, but I'm sure they're shredding cell membranes and creating oxidative stress and inflammation and a host of other problems. But if you really want to see what's in these things, you've got to get them analyzed with a transmission electron microscope or a scanning electron microscope to get down to that level to see what's actually in there. So as much as people are saying we're looking at nano, well, they're not. It's, unless that's a transmission electron microscope, which they're not, we're not looking at the nanotechnology that's in these things.
And it's there. There is nano in there. They're very proficient. Nano's been the hot ticket item in science for how long, Erica? 20, 25 years now? Something like that.
Oh, I would say since 1985 when Eric Drexler came out with his book, I'm drawing a blank.
Sorry. here's the point. When a word gets to be a buzzword, it just takes on a life of its own. It has different meanings. It's like an umbrella word. People throw it around. Remember a few years ago, let's say 10 years ago, 15 maybe, when people used to use the word quantum all the time? Quantum this, quantum that. I used to ask people, what are you talking about? What does quantum mean? They couldn't tell me. But it was used all the time. It was used sort of as another term of small and cosmic and God only knows what else. So now we have nano. That's another one. And now I just want people to understand that whatever this Hydra thing turns out to be, there damn well better be a hell of a lot more people finding them in a hell of a lot more vials. Because what we have so far doesn't even register on the scale of discovery. We've got two different looking things by two different looking people and their work according to their profiles. And I just don't want people to start freaking out. Oh my God, I've got little creatures crawling around in me. First of all, if you got any of those things in you, they're long dead. Your immune system would kill them, if not the saline in your blood. They're freshwater life form. And some of you will say, well, maybe it was augmented and altered with nanotech. You got to draw the line of reality somewhere. Yeah. No, that's exactly right.
People need to understand the danger with these technologies is the operating system. And the operating system is the RNA. That is what carries the program. And we don't know what they're coding for. They tell us they're coding for a spike protein. I maintain it's much more than a spike protein. I believe there's a code in there that's disabling the immune system and also creating the spike protein. But there's some nasty stuff in there. And that's what you have to worry about.
If you find something with a 400 or 500 or 600 power light microscope in anything, I wonder if you started looking in food in the markets under a microscope, I fear to think what you'd find and see.
Oh yeah,
it's just there. It's life. It's bacterial organisms. It's all kinds of things, little creatures, parasites. There are parasites, but there's no evidence that what we've been shown so far is anything much more than these people. I'm not saying their intentions are bad. I'm not saying they've created something out of nothing. I'm just saying everyone needs to go slowly with these kinds of introductions. They're tail chasers, and they're sci-fi, and they're scary, and if you think about it, it's the perfect psyop to introduce at this point in time. It may not
be.
See it as
we don't know. Just a useless distraction at this point. Nothing surprises me that's in these things. I'm just not ready to embrace a narrative that says it's there for mind control. That's, you know... We can do that through directed energy weapons. We can do that through, you know, whatever's living in people's guts. I mean, these victims of Morgellons that have been colonized with these fungal forms. Some of these fungal forms are, they will maintain the nanotechnology that required to alter your thinking.
Altering people's thinking is very easy now. They, excuse the use of the term, can put in your mind memories that you never experienced, things that you have allegedly seen that you never saw, or they can take away memories that you have and images of things that you've seen. They can do ungodly things now. They're 20, 30, maybe more years ahead of that which they admit to or talk about. They're way ahead. And we're not going to find out about it.
The NIH under Obama began that brain initiative. I think it was back in, might have been 2010, where the intent of this initiative was to map the entire human brain. And here we are 11 years later.
Right.
I'm sure they're well into this now.
So
you could look it up, the Brain Initiative, NIH.
Right. I remember that. Keep in mind the cell phone, the whole cell phone grid, cell phone towers, all the antennas, the electric grid, I firmly believe, can be used to transmit any kind of frequency that they want into any grid arm or section in the country they want. Satellites. If you think that Musk's Starlink satellites are only going to be used for 5G, I'm sorry for you. It ain't. These are platforms for mass mind manipulation and control.
Yep.
And as Erica said, stay focused on this bioweapon, this mRNA bioweapon. This is crucial. And the spike protein, crucial. Now, there may be 10 other things in there that are just as bad that we don't even know about. We had to work on the outside on this through speculative science, and we're the first to admit that because we don't know, but we're being very cautious. And with Erica's brilliant background in this field, we've had a very good handle on a lot of things that citizen journalists or green screeners, whatever you want to call them, don't know anything about. And can't. All they can do is repeat what they hear and see elsewhere. So hopefully some of you will hear some of this that are listening right now or whenever you're listening and caution people just to go slow. Go slow. We're not going to find out. They're not going to tell us. We just have to try to process it to the best of our ability. And that's what we do here. All right. Anything you want to add?
No, you summed it up well.
Okay, we have Dr. T, Dr. P, and Dr. XYZ, the five docs, and they have a program called Critically Thinking. And we're going to play a little clip from that. You want to set this up? I guess we're going to just play Dr. T at this point.
Yeah, I think this is a very noteworthy account of. In it, the issue of shedding, it's ongoing.
It's critically important. It's critically important to understand that you who are vaxxed must assume the responsibility that you may well be shedding things to the unvaxxed around you, in your family, in your job place, that they don't want and they don't need. And it works both ways. The unvaxxed have to be aware of people around them that may be vaxxed. If they know they're vaxxed, they need to exercise common sense. I know common sense died a long time ago, but let's resurrect it at least a little bit. So both sides do not hate each other. That's not how it works. Have compassion. But understand there is a danger issue here of shedding. There's no question about it. I mentioned earlier that young boy had a nosebleed and they couldn't stop it after. Was he? He was unvaxxed, right? Or was he vaxxed? I can't remember.
Unvaxxed. These are all unvaxxed.
Bystanders.
You know, these accounts
that I've.
Yeah. Yep. They're either going to school with. Well, usually it's the teacher. If it's a young child, it's the teachers that have been vaxxed that are exposing the kids, and the kids are reacting in very adverse ways. And I,
like
you know, it would be just in some cases. I mean, it becomes critical. They can bleed out.
Okay. All right. Here, let's go with Sherry Tenpenny, who has agree or disagree with her, been carrying a very heavy load, and we appreciate that greatly. So here's Sherry.
And I think that now that we know that even these mandates really were all issued as a, you know, there was nothing, there was no executive order. It was done through a press release. And all these people that have succumbed to this by, I think the fear is mostly gone, but at least succumbed by convenience and arrogance and whatever, you know, the consequences are going to be there. And now just with this article that we talked about earlier, this whole one about, you know, I mean, that's just so disturbing to me, Larry, those numbers that we started. And I'll just say for, you know, in case you guys missed it, if this continues, then 30 to 59-year-olds will have zero defense by Christmas. And all doubly vaccinated over 30 will have completely lost the part of their immune system that tackles COVID-19 by January of next year. So I didn't read the whole article. It's pretty long. It's lots of tables and graphs in here. But it's you know, it kind of goes back to that SAGE report. Remember that SAGE report that came out from the UK probably in July? SAGE that works with the equivalent of the UK where they said, you know, the doubly vaccinated by this fall, meaning like right now as we speak, 65 to 70% will either be hospitalized or dead. And no way, that's not going to happen, blah, 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 blah. And all the lies to cover up the fact that 65 to 70% of people who are hospitalized are fully vaccinated, right? And the people who are vaccinated, they wear a mask for whatever reason because they're still going to get sick, and they're the ones in the hospital. And this just confirms why. It's like gobbling up. It's like Pac-Man gobbling up your immune system. And I had somebody ask me earlier, why, or was it with this call? It was a different thing that I was doing today, a call. Like, why is it that, oh, this was a person that called me that said that their husband had gotten the jab. They're completely on different pages about it. And within 3 weeks after he got the shot, she came down with a severe case of the shingles and ended up with a zoster meningitis.
Oh, wow.
And was in the hospital for 15 days, almost died. And she and I said, well, we've got proof. Ryan Cole talks about it because what the shots do is they eliminate the CDH cells, which is your natural killer cells that keep tumors and keep suppressed viruses in check. When you get rid of those cells, well, this articles talking about why what's happening now, your immune system, your NK killer cells, your natural killer cells are being killed by these shots. The other thing is that your toll-like receptors are being killed. I think it was 3, 4, and 7, I believe. And when 3 and 4 for sure, and 4 is your most important toll-like receptor. And when those go away, then your natural TH1, your natural innate immunity stops having the ability to be vigilant for any other viruses and things that come into your system. And you can go into cytokine storm because there's nothing to stop it if you killed off your toll-like receptors. So now we're seeing, you know, this. So she asked me if I knew if there was any proof, if there was anything that was published. This is a very smart woman. If there was anything that was published that showed that people with this transmission event could, you know, get shingles. And I said, yes. It's real. And, you know, if you yourself got the shot and killed off your CDH cells, we're seeing massive numbers of people that are getting shingles. Ryan's talk, Ryan Cole's talked about the great increase in endometrial cancer. We've heard miscellaneous reports of doctors that have, that are urologists that have men, older men that have stable prostate cancer, because stable cancer or prostate cancer in older men is generally pretty, it just is indolent. It just sort of percolates along, and most men are going to die of old age or a stroke or a heart attack before they're going to die of their prostate cancer. But as soon as they get the shot or they're around somebody that gets the shot and those CD8 cells goes away, poof, they get almost immediate metastatic prostate cancer. Which,
remember what we've been talking about here about these super cancers that I call them. They're breaking out all over the place for precisely exactly the reason that Dr. Tenpenny just said. And Erica, we've talked about herpetic viruses just breaking loose. Most people have them in a latent stage, all right? It doesn't usually come out. Maybe they get really stressed out or they get sick and they'll have an outbreak of shingles or herpes simplex 1 or 2, whatever. This is really important what she's saying, and we're going to see a lot more cancers for the reasons she just stated, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, let's go back to it.
It goes to a question that's in the Q&A that says, I understand transmission is real, but I don't understand is if an unvaccinated person can get something from someone also unvaccinated but married to a vaccinated man. This is a serious question. Yes, and we've answered it multiple times in the past. Transmission is real. The five docs first broke this whole thing back in April of this year. Was one of our first things when we talked about the bleeding diathesis of being around vaccinated people and whatever was transmitting. And that's where we kind of coined this idea that it's a transmission of some kind, not a shedding, because you're not shedding live viruses. You're transmitting something that's causing horrible side effects. So why is it that some get side effects and some don't? Not sure. Why is it that some get more serious side effects than others? I mean, Larry, how many reported cases have we had of women that bled down to so badly, like 5 grams of hemoglobin, to where they needed to go to the hospital and get a blood transfusion to get it to stop? I mean, yes, these things happen. And this friend, this person that called me today said it was from being around her vaccinated husband. So yes, it's a problem. Now, how can you protect yourself? Well, we've talked about, I think that ivermectin really helps. I think that it really helps. It's probably one of the best shots, the best things you have is ivermectin. Keeping your D, C, zinc, quercetin up high, whatever other types of anti-inflammatory things like turmeric. You know, I did a podcast with Dr. Russell Blake.
And let me say one other thing. We've cautioned, and I want to caution again, if you have ivermectin, or hydroxychloroquine, but especially ivermectin, please consider not using it as a prophylactic. Only use it if you get sick and need it. Because if you use it as a prophylactic, well, you know how we have superbugs now? These are bacteria that build up tolerance to virtually every antibiotic on the planet. You don't want that to happen with ivermectin. It's too valuable. It's a very special thing, and the more you use it, the less the influence it may bring to bear on whatever you may get. So just be careful. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And if you have a package of ivermectin, at least the animal version of it, there is a warning on there that the way you dose it is important, because if you don't dose it properly, too much, too little, or too indiscriminately, you can create a parasite resistance. Now, that pertains to parasites. I don't know what that would mean for the virus. I mean, when you're trying to kill something, you are inducing a selective pressure. So these organisms, you know, they reproduce faster than a human does. So they can adapt to these pressures and become resistant to them as a survival mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I think that there are other things that people might consider taking rather than pharmaceuticals, just as a prophylactic. I mean, you could take advantage of the fact that the spike protein is heavily glycosylated, meaning it's decorated in these sugars. And what might be helpful is the glyconutrients, such as the polysaccharides that are in medicinal mushrooms, the ones in brown seaweed, the sulfated polysaccharides in particular. Actually, there was a study done on brown seaweed fucoidin extract compared with remdesivir in terms of neutralizing the spike protein. And it worked as well as, or better actually, than remdesivir in preventing that spike portion of the virus from becoming infected or attaching to the ACE2 receptor. So these glyconutrients are available as a supplement, and they can act as decoys in the bloodstream or the interstitial fluid, wherever they end up, and prevent that spike protein from interacting with your tissues. So that's something to think about.
Very
glyconutrients.
All right.
The other day he was advocating for nanoturmeric, that the nanoturmeric he believes in his research can cross the blood-brain barrier and can go in and help to calm down some of the dementia, the angriness, all the things that are happening in the brain from these shots and from the transmission. I think medicinal mushrooms help. You know, they help to stimulate your immune system. I mean, there's a lots of different things, but these things are real. And everybody wants specific answers that are not yet known. Because who's studying this stuff? Nobody. You can't find what you're not looking for, and nobody's going to put money behind doing a research project for something they don't want to know the answer to.
Okay. Good advice, for sure. She knows what she's talking about. We have a catastrophe. We have a crisis, a worldwide crisis here. And I know a lot of you listening all around the world are probably asking some of the same questions we are. And she just made it very clear, and correctly and appropriately so, that people are asking for answers to questions that we don't have the answers to. They're not going to give it to us. For example, we don't know what else beside the spike protein is in there that no one may have noticed yet. I did hear her say nanoturmeric, which I don't know how that works, but perhaps someone's figured out a way to break it down into that small so it can allegedly pass the blood-brain barrier. I personally wouldn't worry about that. Turmeric is fine. Curcumin is better than turmeric. So curcumin, curcumin. That's your best bet to go. And certainly quercetin and bromelain, it's a great duo. NOW makes those. D3, C. Now, there's an issue with zinc, too. We should maybe, do you want to spend just a minute on this? People
sure.
Shouldn't take too much zinc. That's another thing.
Yeah, I think, with this protocol that's been promoted for the last year, year and a half, as a prophylactic, these high doses of zinc, I think if they're not balanced, if zinc is not balanced with copper, you can induce a copper deficiency. And you might think that, well, there's, so what? You know, at least I got my zinc. But the problem is, without copper, you cannot regulate your iron. And dysregulation of iron with this particular virus seems to be a feature. And so I worry that people may be overdoing the zinc and neglecting the copper. And if they do get infected with this virus, they're going to have a real problem with the iron because, as I said, without copper, you cannot regulate the absorption and the transport of iron. And free iron, if it's not bound to its proteins in the blood, becomes very oxidative, very damaging, very inflammatory. So just keep that in mind. Usually when you take a zinc supplement, a lot of manufacturers will include a little bit of zinc in there.
You mean copper?
Yes, copper. The funny thing about copper is, though, it's a very tricky mineral to balance because you can take copper, but like iron, it also needs a carrier protein because when it's loose or free in the body, it's highly oxidative. So you want it to be bound to its carrier protein, which is ceruloplasmin. And if you are not manufacturing ceruloplasmin, which is usually the the case with people who have adrenal fatigue, which is probably everybody nowadays. You're very often not producing adequate ceruloplasm to carry your copper. So you can take copper all day long, and it ends up being toxic and getting stored in your hair.
So we're not saying, I just want to be clear, we're not saying run out and grab copper supplement and start taking
it. Yeah, it's something to read up on. Be cognizant of it, because you don't want a copper deficiency because of what it does to your iron regulation.
All right. Okay. Well, look up what foods have copper. And maybe just add those to your diet. I don't know. Or get
shellfish.
A copper penny and put it under your pillow at night. Just
That's
kidding.
Right.
Don't do that. All right. So I don't know what else we should present. We've covered the Hydra thing again, whether it's a Hydra or it's not a Hydra. I did get the video clip, Hail Hydra. And people are looking at that and saying, see, they were telling us. It's the Hydra. Well, it came from a comic book movie, so maybe it was part of the comic book. Hail Hydra. I don't know.
It's really, this whole incident, at least for me personally, has brought to focus how few people actually understand what we're dealing with this technology.
They don't understand nano. They throw the word around. I don't even think they understand quantum. I couldn't describe it very well. So
if you're being pushed around, friends.
That's the truth. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just take the time to do some research and understand what DNA, RNA is. That's your genetic code. It's the fast becoming the preferred storage medium for data. 1 gram of DNA can hold 700 terabytes of data.
That's astounding. That is really, I don't even believe it.
Yeah.
I heard it, but that's...
So it is the carrier of information. That is the program. That's what they're putting into you, and you're giving them permission, if you take these things, to inject them into your body, and they will find their way to their cells, and thanks to the vector, the viral vector, or the lipid nanoparticles.
And another thing we should mention, please don't think that all Pfizer bioweapons are identical, have the same components. We think they're changing these things to suit themselves. They've got the ultimate lab rat population to practice with, to research on. J&J, I don't care who it is. I am personally of the mind that they're putting different things in different batches, maybe. They're changing, they're altering. Remember the patent. Remember, the Moderna patent said, may contain, but not limited to. And then they listed about 10 or 12 things. May contain, but is not limited to. Talking about the ingredients. So what is that? That's called an open barn door. You get it?
Yeah.
Not limited to. They can put anything they want in there, according to the patent.
Yep.
So
I was also, when Peter McCullough was on, Dr. Peter McCullough was on last Friday, was it?
Yeah.
When he had the position of that, you know, he wasn't concerned that there was going to be just prolonged production of spike protein from these vaccines, that it would be rather transient and fleeting. And his argument was that, well, these things had failed somewhat miserably for gene therapies in that regard, because the protein production would peter out and that would be the end of it. You'd have to keep giving these things repeatedly to maintain that protein production. But I think the difference with those gene therapies was that those were targeted to specific organs, specific cells, whereas these things are, you know, the fact that they're with the lipid nanoparticle, they're not targeted. They're going everywhere. Wherever they end up is, you know, whatever cell they could infect, transfect. And the adenovirus, same thing. That has a very, very broad tropism for in terms of what cells it can infect. And if it ends up infecting a cell that is a prolific producer of protein, or a cell that is co-infected with another virus and cannot clear or break down this genetic material to get rid of it, it may produce this spike protein forever.
That's
and I think we're seeing that. There's people that are, you know, several months out that are still producing spike protein.
We don't have the answers, but we're watching. Just, again, be patient. Don't argue. Help those who want to be helped or informed. Offer them things to consider. Take care of yourselves. Eat good food. And try to think good thoughts, which is not easy to do. Erica, thanks for everything. Great contributions, as always. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. My pleasure.
Right.
Good night.
Erica Kahn, and that's our update for you tonight. We'll be back Wednesday with another one. So, again, Hydra-like, what is it? I'm waiting to see how many more people will come forward with pictures and evidence. It's called science. Back tomorrow night. Take care.